Okay, so Mary Roach, thank you very much for speaking to Nashville Public Library. We are so excited to have you on our Skype session.
Thank you.
And I'm obviously, I've read Stiff and just adored it, but I'm reading Packing for Mars, The Curious Science of Life in the Void, and loving it equally so. And what I'm trying to figure out, because all your books are very heavy with science, but they don't feel like heavy science books. They're always very, very amusing and full of, gosh, I didn't know that kind of facts. How is it that you pick the subject for your books?
Well, for me, because it's got to lend itself to the humor, and it's got, I want there to be science, I want a little bit of history, it's this process of elimination, because most things won't work. So it's kind of like, that won't work, that won't work. Yeah, particle physics, that won't work. Chemistry, no way. So it's kind of what's left standing.
Right.
And I find that biology and the human body are endlessly, they can be mined for you in many different ways, and it usually comes down to something with biology. And really, it's just not that many things work for me, for my style. So it's not like I'm, oh, how do I decide? I have so many things to choose from.
Well, Mary, did you start out, for viewers who might not be familiar with you and your books, did you start out wanting to go into science, or did you start out wanting to be a science writer, or did you just kind of fall into this?
I absolutely just fell into it. I had a liberal arts degree from Wesleyan University. I'm like, yay, that'll be, someone will hire me and I'll do something really interesting. Well, I graduated in a recession, 1981. No job skills, really. I you know, you learn how to write papers. So editing, I started out as a copy editor, and I did a little copywriting and public relations type of writing. I thought, all right, well, this is kind of fun. So I really fell into it, and I fell into the science writing too. It was absolutely a fluke. Someone from Discover magazine contacted me when I was writing for another magazine and said, do you want to write for us? And I went, woohoo. So just stumbled into it. And then the books just sort of, you know, eventually I wanted to do something longer and wanted to write a book, and so it wasn't, there was very little calculated effort here. It was very sort of passive and stumbling.
Right.
Yeah.
Or we might want, like to say organic, because it kind of
organic,
just,
yes.
It kind of, you
yes.
just kind of went with the flow. But were you ever concerned, you know, your personal style, I find so delightful for the topics at hand, because, you know, there are plenty of books that treat science and these topics with, you know, appropriate seriousness, and you don't tend to do that, but they're still as intelligent as you would want a book like this on these topics to be. Did somebody early on ever say, gosh, Mary, why so flippant? Or you can't be that funny when you're talking about cadavers or, you know, pooping in space or whatever
right.
the topic is.
When I wrote Stiff, I was worried about that. I did think this could be offensive to somebody who had just lost someone. I wasn't sure how, you know, the humor would play. And I thought, well, my editor will take out the parts that are over the top or offensive, and so I'm not going to worry about it. So I just let myself go. And then my editor just, she took out almost nothing. And so we were both a little like, we put it out there and just sort of bracing for disaster, but not really, just having no idea how it would come across. But very, very few people reacted that way, which was wonderful. I worried also, not just offending people, but I worried maybe that people would like tear up their willed body form. Like, well, I was going to donate my body to science, but now that I know what's involved, hell no. So that was a concern. But in fact, so many people would write to us, to me, and say, oh, I was really inspired. I want to donate my body to science. How do I do it? So we had to add a page to the paperback, like how to donate your body to science. But yeah, and I'm just going on intuition, and I don't show my book to anybody before my editor. She's the first person who sees it. So because I really don't know, and I think, what if so I show it to someone and they go, oh, this whole humor thing, it's not working. Well, what do I do? Do I trust them? Do I take it out? And so I don't do it. I just write it, give it to her, see what happens.
And I think a lot of what you do, and I'm going to ask you a little bit about your research procedure, but a lot of what you do is you kind of immerse yourself in the topic. And so if you obviously are a person who has a humorous take on the world, so it would be impossible for you, like if somebody said, well, Mary, we really don't like that, could you take the humor out? How
yeah.
can you probably couldn't do that as you approach the subjects the way you do.
No, I couldn't. I wouldn't be happy doing that. I mean, but some, there are topics that don't lend themselves to humor. There was a part in Stiff, there's a chapter about Flight 800, that, you know, the
yeah.
flight that went down. They couldn't figure out what had happened on the flight, so they looked at the bodies of the victims, and that's a chapter where there's not a lot of humor. There's a little bit at the end, the historical part, where they had something to do with guinea pigs, and which really wasn't funny either.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't initially left that out of the book, and my editor said, hey, where's that plane crash chapter?
Oh, gosh.
And I said, Jill, I can't make that funny. It won't fit the book. And she said, well, try it. Just try to write it. So I did, and I think it's a good chapter, but it really, there's no humor there because the families are still alive, and it's not, there's
mm-hmm.
some things that are not funny,
mm-hmm.
no matter how you treat them. So, but in general, if somebody said, no, we've got to ditch the humor, I would like look for a new publisher.
Yeah. Right. And there's something about your writing that I feel you do. There is always a thread of dignity and seriousness. It's hard to explain. I hope our viewers rush out and get your books because they're absolutely impossible to explain, but they're so
yes.
enjoyable on so many levels because you're learning so much. I always feel like you're taking your subject matter extremely seriously, but you're finding the absurdity. And is it
yeah.
only, do you only find it when you're writing up the chapter, or are you feeling it when you're living the experience, like say in Packing for Mars?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm very much, when I look for what I'm going to cover, in the book, I'm looking with an eye toward what will make one of those wonderful chapters where not only are you learning, but you're going, wow, this is a delightfully weird scenario that I didn't know about. So I am looking through everything that's out there saying, well, no, that's not going to work. That's too straightforward. That's too boring. Valuable work, but boring. So I'm looking for the stuff that will make people go, wow, this is bizarre, how fascinating, how weird. So I'm very much aware of it, even from the beginning, before I start researching, before I start writing.
And Mary, I wanted to ask you, so that's really important because you, let's say, take Packing for Mars. There's so much history with the space program in America. There are so many different tacks you could take with the topic, but it seems like, from what you just said, is the way you approach it is, what as a reader would I find interesting
yeah.
to know? Like, I think the whole section on vomiting in space, which is an unfortunate result of the motion sickness, which I'm sure if a lot of people think about this, the what do we call it? Not the spaceship, but whatever is being launched into space and then comes back, you wouldn't necessarily think of that little very human detail that could make their lives a misery, but NASA's all over it, researching
yeah.
it. You're kind of thinking like maybe the normal reader, stuff that the normal reader would be curious about or would want to know or you wanted to
right.
know more about?
Right. I write very much the books that I would have wanted to read.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of amazing to me with the space program that there wasn't such a book. There's a lot of astronaut memoirs, which are fascinating and kind of compelling and dramatic at times, but there really wasn't the book that I would have wanted to check out of the library. So I thought, all right, I'll write it.
Right. And I think there isn't like one dud chapter, and every single time you turn the page, you're thinking, oh no, what's she going to tell us about next? Oh no. And there is this kind of... But, The detail, I think, is kind of important because, you know, if there wasn't enough detail, it would be just simple absurdity or humor. And if there was any more detail, it would be totally bogged down and really serious. But you seem to manage to hit that sweet spot of, I did want to know more about the throw up. I don't know why, but I just got to a point and I thought, yeah, why do? And dogs do get motion sick. And why is it that rabbits don't? I mean, all of that stuff
yeah.
just kind of comes to life.
Yeah, I have I think part of it is insecurity as a writer. I think I'm always expecting the reader to set down the book at any moment. Oh, this is getting a little boring. No, wait, don't go away. I got something else for you. Come back. So I think it's that fear because there's so many books I pick up and I think, wow, this is going to be really interesting. And then I find myself going, okay, maybe not for 200 pages though. And I put it down, and I have this fear of people putting down the book. So I'm like, and also it's fun for me to write that way. So it keeps me entertained too.
Right. Okay. So you're thinking, okay, I'm going to do the space program, but I'm going to do these few aspects of the space program. How do you start that research? And then the immersion is obviously just one part of it, but what are some of the other
right.
aspects of being able to research a book like this?
Well, there's a tremendous amount of time spent getting up to speed, because I start from the point of an absolute idiot, ignoramus. I really have not followed the space program. I never even read the right stuff.
Right.
So there was this many months of trying to get myself up to speed with the history, because I cover some history too, and I'm looking for those aspects in the history, like, you know, the Enos, the chimp. I wanted to cover not Ham, but the second space chimp.
Yeah.
So just trying to get the lay of the land takes me a while. And then it's a process of becoming a pest and writing to people in the space program, people who are contractors, people doing research. Hi, I'm a science writer and an author, and I wondered, what do you have going on, and can I come to your lab, and what's going to be happening? So a lot of that. And, you know, with NASA, there were some folks who were a little uncomfortable or had to run it through the appropriate channels, and the appropriate channels were, you know, usually tried to help, but sometimes just for various reasons would say no.
Yes.
So it's like, okay, I'd have to go around them or find someone else. So a lot of time is spent doing that, getting the pieces, assembling my pile of sticks that I'll then build something with. Getting the pile of sticks is the hard part for me.
Yeah, Mary, do you ever get kind of discouraged, like you think it's going to be a great topic, and then you delve into it, and you're like, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to make a book out of this?
Every time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I forget that it happens every time, but this last time there was this point where I'm like collapsed on the sofa crying, and I was like, I can't do it. I give up. I can't get act. Two things had fallen apart. The Japanese trip, they'd withdrawn their permission. The cadaver chapter, first they'd said yes, and then they said no. So, and then both of those, I ended up getting them back on track, but there was this point where I'm like, I give up. I just give up. And my husband's saying, if you'll recall, you have been through this on every book. This happens every time. I'm like, no, but this is different. So, it is. I get discouraged. It's usually about 2/3 of the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I'm not getting what I need.
Right.
This isn't good enough, whatever. But it all works out.
It does. And, you know, Mary, that was interesting, and I'm glad that you put it in the book, that NASA, it took you months, right, to get that, to get clearance from NASA to get into the tests with the cadaver. And could you tell the viewers just a little bit about that chapter and what they actually do?
Oh, sure, yeah. This is a chapter about it's essentially a crash test of a capsule. It's the Orion capsule, and this is the capsule that they were going to be using it to go back to the moon, but now it looks like we're not going to the moon, so they're using it as an emergency escape vehicle from the space station. And a space capsule doesn't have landing gear. It just kind of comes down, it falls out of space, and parachute opens, and it's landing on the ocean, so the ocean is unpredictable. You don't know which way the forces are going to come. The thing could get flipped over, it could fall, it could hit sideways. So they had a setup at the Transportation Research Center in Ohio, near Ohio State, and they were where they could put a cadaver in a simulated spacesuit, and that's quite an undertaking to dress a cadaver in a spacesuit. And then once he's wearing the simulation, it's just the hard parts of the suit, and then you get him into the seat that it's a mock-up of the actual seat that the astronauts will be in, and then they apply this. It's just like a hydraulic blast of air that makes it, you know, the force that would mimic the crash. And then they'll do an autopsy, say, like on the shoulder to see, you know, would that have broken the arm, or would it have been a minor injury, or what's going on here? So that's what they were up to.
I think it's interesting, too, that they they used to use real people.
Yeah.
I mean,
that was amazing.
I couldn't believe that, and that they survived, and that really they have kind of minimal old age injuries from having gone through some of this?
Oh, yeah, there were, for the Apollo landings, which again, were coming down on water, they would pay guys out at the Air Force base, they'd give them extra hazard duty pay, and it was actually a substantial bump in their salary, so there was a long waiting list of people who wanted to go on, and it was, you got slammed pretty hard, and some of them ended up with, you know, some minor medical issues.
Yeah.
There was another, there was at one point, one of the companies was paying bums, like getting people off the street paying them, which was a little,
a little
out there. This was the 60s and, you know, before political correctness took hold.
Right. I'm trying to figure out too, Mary, if as you were doing the research, do you kind of suspend your own opinion about what's going on? Is it important to be not politically correct, but to just kind of go forth and just say, well, this is the way NASA does it, or this is the way the Body Farm does this sort of stuff? Or are you kind of gathering an opinion about some of these things you observe as you go forward?
I am... You know, my books are not really advocacy books. I'm not really like proactive in trying to push people toward one opinion or the other. Well, that's not true. Stiff, I really did come down fairly strongly on the side of at least organ donation, if not whole body donation. And I do end up taking a stance, but they're not. I'm not trying to. The point is to entertain people and educate them. And if they end up on one side of the fence or another, that I don't, it doesn't matter to me where they land, as long as they learn something. So that's not a big part of the book. Although I do, you can't help but have an opinion when you're reporting on stuff like this. And they're like, for example, in Stiff, I think there was only one project where I really felt that it was an inappropriate use of bodies. And so, you know, that comes through. Yeah.
Oh, right. Right, so you just kind of let the writing stand as you're preparing the chapter. It's just whatever you felt at the time from having observed and lived through some of the stuff, you just kind of let it just stand in the book. Yeah.
Without really stating an opinion, I think it comes through. It's not hard to tell how I feel about it.
Right. And what would you say I'm sure each book you've done, you could probably think off the top of your head the most memorable insight you had, or what was most memorable about preparing the book, but when packing for Mars, what would you say is the thing that most surprised you or shocked you or otherwise just kind of threw you?
Well, for packing for Mars, it was partly because I knew so little about the topic. I was just blown away by the extent to which the lack of gravity affects everything, every part of the human body, and anything you would try to put up in space that's made on Earth doesn't work. I mean, a match, a fuse, a stomach, a penis, I don't care what it is, it doesn't work the same. And that's why NASA is so expensive. That's why people go, whoa, it's a $5,000 toilet or whatever it is. It's a lot more than that. But I can explain to you why it costs that much. And everything has to be tested in zero gravity, which means hauling it over to Ellington Field and putting it on one of those parabolic flights and putting it in zero gravity to see if it works. So not just the designing, but the testing is incredibly time consuming, and it employs tons of engineers. So it was a real eye opener to me just how you have to rethink everything.
Mm-hmm. And keeping that in mind, you know about how there's so much involved in getting us to space. And now with President Obama talking about, you know, I'm not even really sure, not totally dismantling NASA, but maybe shifting its mission a little bit.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little about that? And then what are your thoughts on that after researching the book?
Sure. Well, it was kind of an abrupt, I spent a couple years on this book, and some of the things I covered had to do with going back to the moon and building a moon base, which would have almost been like, you know, colonizing the moon. It would have been a permanent presence, and that has been scrapped. So that's a major change. All these hundreds of people and years of work that have gone into the habitats, the rovers, the suits, the moon dust mitigation, the science. I mean, just so much was put into it. And then it's like, oh, never mind. We're not going to the moon. But NASA has to deal with this every time there's a shift in administration. They change the vision. So now we have no, we're visionless. We're, well, there's talk of, okay, maybe near Earth asteroid and then on to Mars. But right now the budget hasn't been approved. There's still this partisan bickering going on. It's going to go on through spring, I'm sure. And so right now people at NASA are just bracing for who knows what.
Yeah.
And I think it's a, you know, to me, it would be, if it, to end manned space exploration here would be, it would be really sad given that every program has really been preparing for the next phase. Mm-hmm. You know, you had Gemini was a dress rehearsal basically for Apollo. And then the space program, you know, the space station has been 10 years of essentially like learning how to cooperate globally in space. It's an international space cooperative mission. And the whole idea was figuring out Mars. But how will we get groups, you know, different nations together, deal with long-term problems like bone loss and radiation and all that stuff? And what was the point of all that? You know, for now we're not going, you know. So hopefully it'll be back on track, you know.
Yeah, and I just wonder if the idea of colonizing space or whatever we want to say is getting increasingly more important. I'm not saying trash Earth and then let's just go to another planet and leave it behind.
Right.
But now that we're having so many of these big global issues, I'm just wondering if maybe it isn't increasingly important to look into how to survive on other planets rather than less.
Yeah, and the other thing is that the things that you learn when you figure out how to get to Mars, we're talking about extreme recycling, you know, drinking urine and sweat and using, reusing everything you have. And that mindset is growing, you know, more and more appropriate and applicable. So is in a way, astronauts are kind of these poster children for sustainability. And a Mars mission, you'd be, you really would, the technology that would come out of it, I think, would be especially appropriate now.
It reminds me of wartime when you've got things like transistor radios that come out of that. And
then
you think about Tang on a light note. But, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of things that come out of space research that it would be kind of sad that that innovation would kind of die down a bit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, anything that's lightweight, automated, cordless, fireproof, stuff like high-speed wireless data transfer, automated insulin pumps. I mean, it's unbelievable the technology that comes out of both the space program and, alas, the military. But yeah.
It's kind of a subculture, and a lot of the books that you have written, I guess each of them could be considered kind of subcultures. And are you aware when you're writing them that you're an outsider who's getting a little glimpse in? Do you become a little bit like the people that you are observing or working with when you immerse yourself? Or what is that experience like?
Yeah, I do. I do come at it as an outsider. Absolutely. And that's what's hard, because for one thing, I have this fear of just sounding like an idiot. And people are tremendously patient with me. They get me up to speed. They basically act like tutors. They don't say anything when I, you know, get the acronym wrong, or I say something that shows that I have no background in physics. So I'm incredibly grateful to them for spending this much time. And then there is a bit of a process where I become I'm not a full-fledged insider, but I am an insider to the point where, you know, my emails to my agent, he'll be like, God, you really are a nerd. You really drank the Kool-Aid there.
But in a way, it's what any human being would do when we're trying to assimilate in this culture and get the best result. We would start using the acronyms if that's how everybody, or I think one thing that came through in the book that I found so funny was you using NASA terms, but there was always a parenthesis with like, oh, this actually means hand, or this actually means emerging from the spacesuit. And there were just so many of these very kind of odd and formal ways of referring to just simple things like raising your leg or getting out of a spacesuit.
Oh, yeah. They have a whole language there. Like, it wouldn't say when you're spacewalking and you need to move to the next handrail, it's not move, it's translate or something like that. To translate. I mean, there's just a language that you learn, and for me, there's this. I think, do I start speaking their language, or is that sort of a bogus way of ingratiating myself? And I never know quite what to do. You know, it's like when you go to the taco truck. Do you order in Spanish, or does that insult them because you think they don't speak English? You know,
you just know that's going to end up on a sitcom somehow.
Yeah.
It's hard to win in that particular situation. Well, Mary, finally, I wondered what, if you ever have this kind of thought, what you hope people get from reading your books.
Well, it's different for each book. I mean, I think Stiff, I would love for somebody to put down the book and go and fill out an organ donation form. I mean, that would be great. You know, if anything happens as a result of the book, I think that would be great. And Spook, I think just if, it's a great way for, I think, younger people to learn like critical thought. Like, well, let's not just assume that something inexplicable is a ghost. Let's look at other things that it might be. Maybe it is a ghost, but let's appreciate critical thought, you know. And then Bonk, I just hope people respect sex researchers for the brave people that they are and were. And this book, I'd love to win people over, not just to SpaceX, you know, continued space exploration, but also to science. I can't stand when people say science is boring, because to me, science is the whole world. You know, it's your body, it's space, it's trees, it's your dog. How could it be boring? So I kind of like to act as an ambassador for science.
Yeah, yeah. I think you do a fabulous job. What are you working on next? Can you talk about it?
Oh, not quite yet, but it's another human body related extravaganza.
So. You might as well build on success and all that knowledge that you've accumulated, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for speaking to Nashville Public Library. It has been an absolute thrill for us to have you.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, and I am a huge supporter of law. I could not do what I do without public libraries and interlibrary loan. I'm absolutely dependent on libraries, so go libraries!
Great, thank you.
Thanks.